This is Ananinkai K, and you are listening to Voice of the Water Lily, an exploration of our ancestral music and history. We will be exploring music through the lens of history and history through the lens of music. Music is the chronicle of our story and a testament to our interconnectedness. By understanding our history, we understand ourselves, our ancestors, and our world better. It is my belief that music expresses what the soul means to say, what words fail to express. So, mi gente, join me on this musical and historical journey.
Bueno, mi gente, we have so much to talk about today, but let me start with the one glimmer of good news that I heard this week. After 50 years of impunity, Pedro Pablo Barrientos has arrived and been arrested in Chile after being deported on the 1st of December of this year. Barrientos had to be walked past crowds that called him a murderer and played the voice of Víctor Jara. Even though I knew Barrientos was being extradited to Chile, I have to say that I got very, very emotional when I heard it, when I saw the pictures. It's still incredible to me that after 50 years, he will face justice, at least to the extent possible, for the crimes that he committed. Because Víctor Jara is finally going to get justice, because the criminal who ended his physical existence will face justice. It's been a long fight. There's still a fight ahead, but I am sure that Víctor Jara will live on forever, and Barrientos will face justice, not just in this life, but in the next as well. Now I have to turn to the other thing that I must speak about before we get into the show today. I have to talk about Gaza. Let me describe to you some of the images that I have seen just this week. I saw a bomb crater where a building full of people once was. That bomb came from the United States. I've seen so many images of dead and wounded children, sometimes alone on a hospital floor, under rubble, laying in the street, sometimes with a bereaved parent whose screams pierce your heart. I saw a video of a girl named Alma crying for help from under rubble, asking the rescue workers to save her family first. I've seen a man holding the body of his dead granddaughter so tenderly, he calls her the soul of his soul. I also saw that same man so kindly, so gently helping others in a hospital, even though he has lost so much and he's in so much pain. That is humanity. I saw children screaming in panic as they realize that their parents are dead. I've seen far too many little bodies being prepared for a mass grave, parents holding their dead babies up for a camera to see, trying to make the world see that they are in fact human. I read words from Gazans trapped in the concentration camp that Israel has created that shattered my heart. I saw Israeli soldiers violate and invade people's homes. I saw Israeli soldiers shoot at journalists. I saw armed Israeli settlers on the West Bank harass, threaten, and throw stones at a Palestinian family sitting outside on their own land. But the thing that I saw this week that really just this whole genocide that was the worst thing that I've seen these past 2 months was on the 5th of December when Motaz documented the bombing of Deir al-Balah, which is just down the street from his house. And trust me when I say I have never seen anything like that. Not during this whole genocide, not ever. I can't even begin to describe the images that we looked at in horror through our phone screens. I sit here trying to think of words, but all words fail in describing this. Let me tell you at least how it made me feel. I was sitting in front of my window, where I am right now, at my desk when I opened my phone. And I stared in horror as I watched scenes that I still cannot believe are real. Still cannot believe are possible in this world. I've said so many times that I have no words, but every time I realize it was a lie until that moment. I felt so sick, frozen, stuck to my chair. I couldn't even cry. I felt as if there was a collective scream just stuck in my chest, and all I could feel was rage. And then all I could do was cry. Cry in that way where you feel the pain deep inside your chest, true despair. Just crying for those lives lost, the whole of Palestine, crying for all of them, for humanity. Because I saw hell, and it was on earth. Those scenes, they look like scenes from some apocalyptic horror movie. But it was all real. Those people that were wounded so horrifically, those people that were dead, those are real people. I saw things that I really never thought I could see. They have created hell on this earth. The genocidal Zionist government of Israel has created hell. The United States government has created hell on this earth. At the root of it all, though, colonialism has created hell for millions around the world. Wherever its hand touches, it creates hell. This is not normal. And when we normalize it, we excuse it. This is not excusable. I will not excuse this. I will not normalize it. And I will not stop talking about it. I will keep saying no. Hell no. And you should be too. Yet now I have to continue. We have to continue. We have to get to the topic of today's show. I have to start speaking about not a genocide happening now, but one of the greatest perpetrators of genocides whose crimes leave scars across the globe. I see so much of the policy that this man helped to create at work in Gaza now. Yet, as we speak, he's being hailed as a great statesman. He's just died. Henry Kissinger. Perpetrator of millions of deaths and one of those who truly did create hell on this earth for so many innocent lives. We'll start talking about his numerous crimes today, right after this song. Very much appropriate, and I know you've heard me play it so many times on the show. El Derecho de Vivir en Paz. Before we get to talking about his role in the tragedy, in the horror, and the genocide that took place in Vietnam, this song, of course, is Victor Jara singing a tribute to Ho Chi Minh, to the people of Vietnam, and to the people all over this world. He says it's el canto universal, the universal song, the right to live in peace. We'll get to that before we start talking about Henry Kissinger's crimes.
El derecho de vivir, poeta Ho Chi Minh, que golpea de Vietnam a toda la humanidad. Ningún cañón borrará el surco de tu arrozal. El derecho de el lugar más allá del ancho mar donde revientan la flor con genocidio y napalm. La luna es una explosión que funde todo el clamor. El derecho de vivir en paz. Thank you. divina paz. La luna es una explosión que funde todo el clamor. El derecho de vivir en paz. Dio con nuestra canción, es fuego de puro amor, es palomo, palomar, olivo del olivar, es el canto universal.
We just heard Victor Jara with El Derecho de Vivir en Paz. Now, I'm not going to give you any kind of biography about Henry Kissinger. I'm here to talk about the countless crimes that he's committed. And even so, I'm only going to be able to talk about really a handful of them. But I really wanted to make sure to talk about these things and to really talk about the main ones, the ones that caused so much death and destruction to so many people. And his really... I know it sounds like an exaggeration, but millions of victims. And when you listen to today's show, you'll really see millions of victims. So I've decided the best way to do that is I'm just going to go by country and I'm going to talk about the main ones. But there's so much that's being left out here. And I definitely will do shows in the future, just more about his role around the world and the policy that he created, that policy that he helped to create, and what that did. I definitely want to do a show just talking about what his role is in Latin America. But of course, there's not enough time for that today. So we're just going to talk about some of his main crimes. I'm going to talk about Vietnam. And I want to give you a little bit of context just to talk about what happened there before Kissinger comes into the picture, because the whole thing is just so, so unjust. Vietnam had been teetering between independence and Chinese occupation for about 2,000 years after the Chinese emperor conquered the Ao Lạc monarchy there in 180 BC. So really, colonialism in Vietnam goes back such a long way, and this is something that we could just go on and talk about for such a long time. Then, of course, enter the colonial European powers. France seized Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos and called them French Indochina. World War II happens and Japan takes France's colonies. World War II ends and Japan loses the war and France wants to take back their colonies again. The country that was an imperial football being kicked between one imperial power and another, really, they had enough of this. The people were not having it. They were done being treated that way. And then enters a Marxist and very charismatic leader, Ho Chi Minh. He had actually previously worked for the OSS, which is kind of the predecessor to the CIA, and he worked with them against Japan. He helped to rescue downed American pilots. And then in 1945, he declares the Republic of Vietnam. He then writes Truman. Actually, he wrote 8 letters to him, asking for help with aid and assistance. He creates a democracy there. He grants voting rights and really does so many reforms for the people. The U.S., in response to this man who actually in his Declaration of Independence starts it the same exact way that the U.S. Declaration of Independence starts, someone who admired the United States so much, they respond to him by financing 70% of France's war against Vietnam. Now we fast forward to 1954, and both sides are doing very badly. The French want out of this mess, and the Vietnamese were not giving up, even though they were losing a lot of people. The Geneva Accords are signed, and which create the division between the North and South of Vietnam. There was also a 2-year ceasefire, and there was going to be supervised elections. every country agrees, except for the United States, because they knew one thing, and that was Ho Chi Minh would win very, very easily. The United States said absolutely no way. And in Latin America, you know how, if you listen to my show about Chile, they called it a red sandwich, right? If two countries became red, the whole thing would become red. Communist. In Asia, they called it the domino effect, and they said it must be prevented at all costs. So then Eisenhower establishes a puppet government of Diem, who was a Roman Catholic in a Buddhist country, and spoiler alert, a total tyrant. By 1960, the South Vietnamese were done with Diem, and they rise up and create the Viet Cong. The United States gave Diem money to and built their military. They strengthened their economic presence. Also, thousands of American advisors showed up through Eisenhower's term, and even more so through Kennedy's administration. Diem was actually so horrific to the people of Vietnam that the Buddhist monks started literally setting themselves on fire on the streets of Saigon. Diem was completely out of control, and his generals told Kennedy that they were going to get rid of him, and the U.S. went along with it because Diem seemed to start thinking that Vietnam was his country, and he seemed to be forgetting who would actually put him in power. Now enter the U.S., and we know these the horrors that they unleashed on Vietnam. First of all, the propaganda campaign that was very strong, the United States was torturing people in Vietnam and then blaming the Viet Minh. They, you know, burned villages, massacred villages. They sprayed 19 million gallons of herbicides, which destroyed the trees, the farms, the food crops. There are still places in Vietnam where the vegetation does not grow the same as it did. Those same places have insanely high rates of rare cancers and birth defects. That still continues to this day. And of course, we have the people being slaughtered from the air with the bombing campaigns that really are inconceivable. This is already bad enough, right? Now we enter Henry Kissinger into this. Nixon wins the election, and he appoints Kissinger as the National Security Advisor and then later Secretary of State. And while those titles may not seem like the job descriptions of someone holding incredible power, they were. Kissinger was extremely powerful. He had influence in the CIA and the Pentagon, and of course, a lot of influence over Nixon. This is when he is the one behind the expansion of the U.S. Role in Vietnam. He would also sabotage peace efforts. And this expansion led to 21,000 American soldiers to die. That is 40% of all the American deaths in Vietnam are because of Kissinger's expansion of the war there. And then 1.5 to 2 million South Asians killed. That's 50% of the total just during Nixon and indirectly Kissinger's administration. Because we really have to talk about this was in a way Kissinger's administration. He was behind so much of the foreign policy. So we talk about Vietnam, the horror that's inflicted there. And then we have to talk about the illegal secret bombing of Cambodia. While he was terrorizing Vietnam, Kissinger became convinced that the neutral Cambodia was harboring Viet Cong and aiding North Vietnam. U.S. manipulation and meddling in Cambodia had started in the mid-50s. And then Nixon basically says, because Kissinger is convinced this is that Cambodia is going communist. You're going to see that phrase come up a lot because that was basically the excuse for almost everything that he did. All of this, the horror that he inflicted upon people around the world was they were going communist and this had to be stopped. Then Nixon says, quote, they have to go in there. I mean, really go in. I want everything that can fly to go in there and crack the hell out of them. There's no limitation on mileage. There's no limitation on budget. Is that clear? Kissinger then relays it to General Alexander Haig, saying, he, Nixon, wants a massive bombing campaign on Cambodia. He doesn't want to hear anything. It's an order. It's to be done. Anything that flies, anything that moves, you got that. There's a recording of this, of Kissinger telling Haig this, and Haig just laughs. That's his response to Kissinger basically giving the orders to bomb anything that flies, anything that moves in Cambodia. This was the green light on what would again become a slaughter in Cambodia. one of the many covert operations in Cambodia, Operation Menu, it was called, from 1969 to 1973, actually lists Henry Kissinger as one of the commanders alongside Nixon. And each of the 3,800 air raids were personally, again, note, personally signed off by Henry Kissinger. The even more devastating Operation Freedom Deal from 1970 to 1973 that killed at least 100,000 Cambodians also boasts Kissinger as a co-commander with Nixon. He also manipulated and falsified bombing records. And this plunged this small agricultural nation into a famine because farms were bombed. Herbicides were sprayed, and there was a complete famine there. In all, they killed over 600,000 civilians. That's almost 10% of the population. They left Cambodia. They stopped the bombing in 1975. But what I think is important to talk about is that this bombing campaign, the carpet bombing of Cambodia, was secret. The American people did not know about it. And this was because at that time, it was illegal to bomb a country that you were not at war at. And Cambodia was a country that the United States was not at war at. What threat did the country of Cambodia, this country was not industrial, this is a farming nation, what threat did that pose to the United States? Absolutely nothing. Yet, again, according to Kissinger, they were supporting the communists. They might go communist, and they had to be bombed. This brutal bombing campaign led to the rise of the Khmer Rouge, who used this to get in power and go on their own killing spree. And of course, they killed about a quarter of the population, about 2 million people. Absolutely horrifying what the Khmer Rouge would do, but it's not separate from what the United States did. The United States' carpet bombing of Cambodia literally was the reason that the Khmer Rouge could gain so much power. This was the reason they would take people to the bombing sites. They would recruit from families that had family members killed by the bombing. And this is what they used, I mean, to recruit people. There are even pictures of the Khmer Rouge where you can see, and you zoom into the pictures really well. They're all over the internet. You can look it up. And you look at who are these quote-unquote soldiers, and you'll see that they're literally children. I mean, they can't be more than 12 years old. They look like they can barely carry their machine guns that are in their hands. This was all created by the United States because of what they did. Cambodia is one of the most bombed places on earth, right after Laos. And by the way, I'm not going to get too much into that, but Kissinger had his role there too. That's another crime scene. The most bombed place on earth. And it was a country that had, again, nothing. Laos was, again, another neutral country, had nothing to do with North Vietnam. They were not aiding them or anything. And all of this was in the name of anti-communism. Thanks a lot, Kissinger. Before we get on to talking about another one of the horrific crimes committed by Kissinger, we're going to get to another song. We're going to go to, I know this is a funny choice, especially for me, and I never thought that this is something that I would probably play on the podcast. I just heard this song pretty recently, and I listened to it, actually, in all honesty, because the incredible, incredible work of Mamiya Abu-Jamal, his Murder Incorporated series, book two. On the chapter about Vietnam, he references a song from Pete Seeger. It's called The Big Muddy, and of course, it's a reference to war. It makes a lot of sense in this context. So I'm going to play that song now. I know it's definitely far out of what my usual music on here is, but I think we have to really look at the message and where the message fits. I think it's important to put this kind of song and really just draw those connections. So we're going to actually listen to Pete Seeger, The Big Muddy.
Back in 1942, I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be nervous, Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination, men follow me, I'll lead on. We were neck deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Well, all at once the moon clouded over, we heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, turn around, men, I'm in charge from now on. And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy about a half mile from where we'd gone. We were lucky to escape from the big muddy when the big fools had to push on. Well, I'm not going to point any moral, I'll leave that for yourself. Maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the paper, them old feelings come on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. Where? Waist deep in big muddy, the big fool says to push on.
Well, that was Pete Seeger. Now we must talk about another terrible, terrible case of what Henry Kissinger, what Henry Kissinger's foreign policy did. What was the real impact of that? We must talk about East Timor. This was a place that the people had lived, the people of East Timor had lived there uninterrupted, completely peacefully for 42,000 years before, of course, I think you guessed it, the European powers pull up and Portugal takes East Timor. It was their colony. But we have to ask, what does this have to do with the United States? It's a little island in near Indonesia in that whole archipelago. We have to ask, why is the U.S. interested in this? Well, and how did all this come about? How did genocide unfold there? And how was the U.S. involved? I mean, why are they interested in a little island so far away from the United States that really posed no threat to them? Well, it all goes back to when Portugal overthrows the fascist dictatorship of Alvarez and a new, again, communist government supported Timorese independence. They didn't want colonies anymore. After all, this is a communist government. They weren't interested in that. The Revolutionary Front for an Independent East Timor, better known as FRETILIN, and the Timorese Democratic Union, UTD, both had a lot of support. Indonesia initially did support independence for East Timor, but then decided that they wanted East Timor to become the 27th province of Indonesia. Portugal was actually preoccupied with their own issues at home and ignored Indonesia's mock invasion in February of 1975. Right after that, Portugal guarantees Timor's independence by, they say that they will be independent by 1978 and said that Indonesia had no right to take over. The UTD and FRETILIN, who had had a coalition, a very uneasy one, but a coalition nonetheless, started fighting because there was a lot of propaganda being used against them, especially on the part the U.S. was again already involved here, and Indonesia is really hell-bent on getting East Timor to be part of Indonesia. In August of 1975, UDT actually did a coup because they thought FRETILIN was going to basically do a coup. Even though FRETILIN had gotten more votes than them and was more popular, FRETILIN did a counter coup and then controlled most of the country, including the capital, and called for an immediate independence. Indonesian troops moved to the capital, Dili, and UTD became refugees in Indonesia, and they actually signed a pro-integration petition. Indonesia then started to infiltrate East Timor. By the 28th of November, Fretilin declared independence. And the next day, Indonesia responds by saying that this was actually the day of integration, not independence. The scheduled invasion, which was, by the way, equipped with U.S. planes and weapons, was scheduled for early December, but then was delayed until the 6th of December to wait for the green light from the United States. Henry Kissinger and President Ford showed up on the 6th and signed off on this genocide, basically. Signed off on the integration of and the invasion of East Timor into Indonesia. They gave a green light to Suharto, who was the dictator there at the time, to do this. So then the invasion started, and there are actually videos and pictures of this, of Ford and Kissinger meeting with Suharto, signing off on what he would then do the next day. On the 7th of December, the horrific, horrific violence started there. And the CIA, there's no plausible deniability here. There's no deniability in the fact that Ford and Kissinger knew exactly what was happening, because the CIA was receiving breaking updates as things happened. They were fully aware as to what Indonesia was doing. And I want to give you a little bit of example. I'm reading again from Mamia Abu-Jamal's book, book two of Murder Incorporated. And I would like to read just a bit about what exactly happened in East Timor. Here is a radio broadcast from the first few hours of that horrific invasion. And he says, and the radio broadcast says, quote, "Women and children are being shot in the streets. We are all going to be killed. I repeat, we are all going to be killed. This is an appeal for international help. Please do something to stop this invasion." Meanwhile, Mamia writes, quote, "It was a mission that Henry Kissinger was very specific about, instructing Suharto on the eve of the invasion. It is important whatever you do succeeds quickly." I'll continue. Here's a quote from Amy and David Goodman. Quote, "Thousands of people were killed in the first few days of the invasion. Indonesian troops would drag people out of their houses and shoot them as their family members were forced to count them as they fell into the harbor. The sea was red with blood." And here we have a heartbreaking, heartbreaking letter sent from a Catholic priest in East Timor to Catholic nuns in Portugal. Quote, "The invaders have intensified their attacks in the three classic ways, from land, sea, and air. The bombers do not stop. Hundreds die every day. The bodies of the victims become food for carnivorous birds. Villages have been completely destroyed. The barbarities, understandable in the Middle Ages, justifiable in the Stone Age, are an organized evil that has spread deep roots in East Timor. The terror of arbitrary imprisonment is our daily bread. I am on the persona non grata list, and any day I could disappear. Genocide will come soon." Genocide, in fact, did come. Between 230,000 and 300,000 people were killed on an island with a population of 629,000. 300,000 people were moved to relocation camps controlled by Indonesia, and there they faced starvation and rampant disease, as well as terrible abuse from the military. This is the horror that Henry Kissinger quite literally green-lighted, signed off on Suharto, on the Indonesian military, to do the horrific, horrific things that they inflicted upon the people of East Timor. Before we get to talking about another one of Kissinger's crime scenes, let's get to another song. We're going to go to an anti-war song that was originally written by Iyapu, but here we're going to hear a cover from Victor Heredia, the great Argentinian singer, and we're going to hear his version of Sobreviviendo.
Me preguntaron cómo vivía, me preguntaron, sobreviviendo, dije, sobreviviendo. Tengo un poema escrito más de mil veces, en él repito siempre que mientras alguien pronuncia muerte sobre esta tierra y se fabriquen armas para la guerra. Yo pisaré estos campos sobreviviendo, todos frente al peligro sobreviviendo, tristes y errantes hombres sobreviviendo, sobreviviendo, sobreviviendo. No río como hace tiempo, y eso que yo reía como un jilguero. Tengo cierta memoria que me lastima y no puedo olvidarme lo de Hiroshima. Cuánta tragedia sobre esta tierra, hoy que quiero reírme apenas si puedo. Ya no tengo la risa como un jilguero, ni la paz de los pinos del mes de enero. Ando por este mundo sobreviviendo, 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 sobreviviendo. Quiero ser solo un sobreviviente. Quiero elegir el día para mi muerte. Tengo la carne joven, roja la sangre, la dentadura buena y mi esperma urgente. Quiero la vida de no quiero ver un día manifestando por la paz en el mundo a los animales. ¿Cómo me reiría ese loco día? Ellos manifestándose por la vida y nosotros apenas sobreviviendo. Sobreviviendo, 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 sobreviviendo.
Now we must talk about Henry Kissinger's famous role. I've talked about this before. If you listen to my two shows about what happened in Chile on the 11th of September, 1973, then you will know that Henry Kissinger had such an important role in what happened and the coup that happened there. He headed the 40 committee, which worked to sabotage Salvador Allende's chances of winning the 1970 election. And the 40 committee was actually a covert action committee that discussed the covert actions that the United States was to conduct overseas. The 40 committee's chairman was none other than Henry Kissinger. In June 1970, Kissinger then says, "I don't see why we need to stand by and watch a country go communist due to the irresponsibility of its people. The issues are far too important for the Chilean voters to be left to decide for themselves." I mean, clear colonial contempt there in that quote. On the 5th of November 1970, Henry Kissinger wrote in a memo for Nixon, "The election of Allende as president of Chile poses for us one of the most serious challenges ever faced in this hemisphere. Your decision as to what to do about it may be the most historic and difficult foreign affairs decision you will have to make over the next 6 to 12 months and will have ramifications that will go far beyond just U.S.-Chilean relations. They will have an effect on what happens in the rest of Latin America and the developing world, on what our future position will be in the hemisphere and on the larger world picture, including our relations with the USSR. They will even affect our conception of what our role in the world is." Kissinger then says, "Allende was elected legally, the first Marxist government to ever come to power by free elections. He has legitimacy in the eyes of Chileans and most of the world. There is nothing we can do to deny him the legitimacy and claim he does not have it." He then concludes by saying, "In my judgment, the dangers of doing nothing are greater than the risk we run trying to do something, especially since we have flexibility in tailoring our efforts to minimize those risks." On the 15th of October, 1970, Kissinger tells the CIA, "Continue keeping pressure on every Allende weak spot in sight." The CIA reported directly to Kissinger about Operation Fewbelt that resulted in the murder of the Armed Forces General René Schneider. Kissinger managed the operation that was meant to prevent the confirmation of Allende and create a military coup. Later it was shown that Kissinger received briefings on the actions of right-wing governments. This is after the coup, after Allende's government is violently overthrown in a coup. Especially Operation Condor. He received briefings as to the systematic torture and disappearances of leftists all over Latin America. The State Department briefings show that Kissinger was also aware of Operation Condor plans to assassinate exiled leftists in France and Portugal. On the 16th of September 1973, Kissinger phoned President Nixon, telling him that nothing of very great consequence had happened and that the Chilean thing was getting consolidated. Kissinger would go on to say, almost astounded at the ingratitude of the Chilean people for not being happy that their democratic choice had been so savagely destroyed, saying, "I mean, instead of celebrating, in the Eisenhower period, we would be heroes." Interestingly, it was actually the same day that Victor Jara, 16th of September, the same day that Victor Jara would write his last song, Canto que mal me sales, the same day that he would be savagely murdered. And that was the same day that Nixon and Kissinger chatted about a football game and matters of not very great importance. The ingratitude of the Chilean people as they endured unspeakable horror. Kissinger, days after the coup, sent an ambassador to convey, quote, "our strongest desires to cooperate closely and establish firm basis for cordial and most constructive relationship." Kissinger was asked by Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs what to tell Congress about the reports of massacres in Chile. He says, "I think we should understand our policy that however unpleasant they act, this government is better for us than Allende was." In 1975, Kissinger directly told Pinochet, "My evaluation is that you are the victim of all the left-wing groups around the world and that your greatest sin was that you overthrew a government that was going communist." Later that year, Kissinger told Chilean Foreign Minister Admiral Patricio Carvajal, "Well, I read the briefing for this meeting, and it was nothing but human rights. The State Department is made up of people who have a vocation for the ministry. Because there were not enough churches for them, they went into the State Department." Both of them then laugh. Kissinger then tells Pinochet in June of 1976, "General Pinochet, I wanted to meet with you because I'm being forced to give this speech on human rights, and I wanted to tell you that this speech is not about you. I believe you are a victim of left-wing propaganda around the world and that your only crime was overthrowing a government that was going communist." In the United States, as you know, we are sympathetic with what you're trying to do here. We want to help you, not undermine you. You did a great service to the West in overthrowing Allende. Kissinger's role in legitimizing Pinochet's dictatorship was vital. He literally and figuratively embraced him and all that he did, all of the horror that Pinochet did. So we really must say, good choice in friends, Henry. Really, I mean, impeccable, impeccable friends. I must also talk about Argentina, because he supported, Kissinger supported the military junta led by Jorge Videla. Kissinger gave the military go-ahead on the covert repression of political opponents, which included arrest, detention in one of Argentina's 400 concentration camps. These, of course, were secret, and many times executions. In fact, the executions, the murder and disappearances of 30,000 people and the torture of many more. Later, according to declassified documents, he tried to stop the Carter administration from taking back support for Operation Condor. He was also the personal guest of Videla at the 1978 World Cup in Argentina. And I would like to note now that this is not the full extent of Kissinger's role in Argentina or the whole of Latin America, where his bloody fingerprints are really quite evident. We're going to get to another song now before we continue talking about really Kissinger's terrorism around the world. I think an appropriate song would be Angel Para with Allende Presidente. You're going to hear the voice of Salvador Allende in the beginning, and he actually mentions Kissinger and Nixon in this song. It's all about the coup, it's all about what happened, and the terror that was inflicted upon the Chilean people for 17 years, fully endorsed, supported by the United States. So here is Angel Para with Allende Presidente.
Que quieren retrotraer la historia y desconocer a la voluntad mayoritaria de Chile. Sin tener carne de mártir, no den un paso atrás. Y que lo sepan, dejaré la moneda cuando cumpla el mandato que el pueblo me diera.
Allende presidente, te vengo a saludar. Tu presencia está viva, de la montaña al mar. Eterna en la memoria de Chile que sufrió por la rastrera infamia de un general traidor. Cobarde y asesino, así lo llamo yo. Allende presidente, usted fue la esperanza de un mundo de justicia, sin odios ni venganza. Allende compañero, usted que resistió, la metralla en la mano tenía la razón. La dignidad era parte de vuestro corazón. Quien ordenó la muerte, Kissinger o Nixon, consumaron el crimen, horror y delación. La CIA, los fascistas, pagado en Washington. El pueblo desarmado no tuvo protección. Cae la noche en Chile, torturas y prisión. El pueblo desarmado no tuvo protección. Cae la noche en Chile, torturas y prisión. Allende combatiente, maestro presidente, los hijos de la patria hoy te dicen presente. La luz de tu memoria, lealtad, valentía, quedaron en la historia como una profecía. La justicia demora, pero al fin llega un día. Presidente chileno, hermano, compañero, volvemos a cantar, contigo venceremos.
Thank you.
Bolívar y Zapata, el Che, los jornaleros, los pobres de la tierra indican el sendero. Justicia, pan, trabajo, escuelas para el pueblo, mujeres combativas, ardientes como el fuego, renuevan la confianza, firmes como el acero. 30 años han pasado, vuelves a aparecer, los traidores se pudren, se morirán de sed. Tu imagen se agiganta, tus ideas también, el pueblo nunca olvida a quien lo quiso bien. Y escriben en los muros, vuelves a florecer, Allende presidente, que sirva la ocasión. Denuncio aquí la infamia, la noche del terror, de brutos carceleros que imponen el dolor, violando la inocencia, que le pidan perdón a la bandera patria, a Víctor, al amor.
Córrele, córrele, que te van a matar.
Salvador, vendrán otros momentos de historia y emoción. El cuento no termina cantando esta canción. Seguiremos luchando con fuerza, con pasión. Semilla que sembraste por la revolución. 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 Semilla que sembraste.
To continue, we're going to talk about Kissinger's role, his terrible role in the genocide that happened in Bangladesh in 1971. The Nixon administration supported Pakistani dictator Yahya Khan, and who launched Operation Searchlight with U.S. approval to stop Bengali nationalists that wanted independence. Kissinger, who was the national security advisor at the time, of course, also supported this. And what he was basically supporting was what at the time was known as West Pakistan, what we know as Pakistan today, to basically attack and do what was later termed a selective genocide in East Pakistan. East Pakistan is what we know as Bangladesh today. And this resulted in, and the U.S. sent weapons, militarily supported the government of Khan to launch this horrific genocide. 3 million people, up to 3 million people were killed in 8.5 months. Kissinger then mocked people who, quote, bleed for dying Bengalis. A telegram sent from the United States Consul General Archer K. Blood in East Pakistan, again, now Bangladesh, said that West Pakistan was carrying out a selective genocide, killing Bengalis, especially intellectuals, supporters of independence, and Hindus. Blood then sent another telegram saying, quote, our government has failed to denounce atrocities. Our government has evidenced what many will consider moral bankruptcy, but we have chosen not to intervene, even morally, on the grounds that the Awami conflict, in which unfortunately the overworked term genocide is applicable, is purely an internal matter of a sovereign state, end quote. Nixon, with Kissinger's support, fired Archer Blood because of these comments. And it was an absolute scene of horror what happened in Bangladesh. Cities were completely depopulated, villages wiped off the face of the planet. 10 million people, remember the population of East Pakistan at the time, is 65 million. So you have 10 million fleeing to India and then 3 million slaughtered by the Pakistani army. It was absolutely horrific. And as I mentioned before, Kissinger and Nixon did nothing to stop this. They sent arms covertly while they knew exactly what was being done. Kissinger also is on record calling Prime Minister of India at the time, Indira Gandhi, a witch and a bitch. And he says Indians are bastards. Really classy talk there. And open racism there from Henry Kissinger. This, of course, was because India supported East Pakistan, Bangladesh in this war. And in fact, in the end, East Pakistan would win their independence. And of course, that's how the country of Bangladesh now came about. But that is a truly, truly horrifying role that Henry Kissinger plays in an absolute genocide in Bangladesh. I also feel compelled to mention another thing that Kissinger did. There's so much to talk about. There's so much that I'm not going to be able to get to today. But I also have to talk about Kissinger created strong ties to the Congolese dictator Mobutu Sese Seko, who he met with multiple times. He actually said of Sese Seko that he's one of our policy successes in Africa. He praised him as courageous, politically astute, and relatively honest in a country where government corruption was a way of life. The man that Kissinger praised as honest actually stole 60% of the country's national budget in 1970. That would actually make him one of the most corrupt leaders in the entire world. He was also a brutal dictator for 32 years. So much of the foreign policy that Kissinger worked to create, I really see at work in Gaza right now. Just like so many of these examples we've spoken of, the people of Gaza, of Palestine, want nothing more than freedom from an illegitimate genocidal government that places upon them the most brutal apartheid, that murders them with impunity, that oppresses them, that shows open racism and contempt for them. They live under the shadow of a regime that does not see them as worthy of life, that does not see them as human beings. And now, as we speak, the United States supports the ceaseless carpet bombing and murder of Palestinians. On Friday, the 8th of December, they stopped single-handedly a ceasefire from happening. I see this as a clear continuation of Kissinger's foreign policy. This is what Kissinger did time and time again. This is what the United States continues to do. And one last thing that I'd like to mention here in the case of Israel. Henry Kissinger was admittedly and completely, obviously, anti-Semitic. And yes, I know that he was a German Jew. But just hear me out. I'm going to read a couple quotes. "If it were not for the accident of my birth, I would be anti-Semitic," he says. He also says, "Any people who have been persecuted for 2,000 years must be doing something wrong." He then says in 1973 of the Soviet persecution of Jews, quote, "The emigration of the Jews from the Soviet Union is not an objective of American foreign policy. And if they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern," end quote. These are, to me at least, absolutely horrifying and openly anti-Semitic comments. So I think Netanyahu should have kept this one in mind before he praised him upon the news of his very timely death. I mean, what hypocrisy. Netanyahu just days ago had the nerve to say that the ICC prosecuting Israel for war crimes would be pure anti-Semitism, yet he goes ahead to praise someone who is obviously profoundly anti-Semitic, and I think I'd like to mention that bit of hypocrisy before we get to another song.
Aquí vivía un hombre ayer, hoy vive solo. Su hijo Manuel busca a su padre, quiere saber a dónde puede su llanto arder. Tenía 5 años el día que su madre dijo de viaje fue, nada ha cambiado. Del cuarto aquel, sobre la cama, yace un clavel. A cada noche y amanecer, corre hasta el cuarto buscándole. Su madre entonces, dice Manuel, tal vez mañana tengamos fe. Creció soñando el día ver el de su cuento de anochecer. Su madre entonces dijo Manuel, solo lo cierto lo ha de traer. Esta celda donde el odio ha confinado la sonrisa, amada mía,
yo me desangro en la ausencia de tus manos y me duermo con tu universo, que es fuerza y vida en la esperanza de los hijos que quedan. No ha sido en vano el sacrificio de la carne. No ha sido en vano el sacrificio de mi cuerpo. Hasta siempre, amor. Hasta siempre.
There was a song that I put and I chose because there is so much. That to me is a song for the victims of Kissinger in a way, because so many of his victims, that's a song, I talked about it last week, that's a live recording. That's a song about desaparecidos, about the disappeared. So many of Henry Kissinger's victims were disappeared all around the world. So many people that were put into mass graves that are unidentified. So many people that people never saw them again. They were kidnapped, never seen again. that to me there is a song for all of the victims of Kissinger's foreign policy there. A beautiful song from Ijapu, Tres Versos para una Historia. For all of this work that I've spoken to you about, Henry Kissinger was awarded a Nobel Peace Prize in 1973. Two members of the Nobel Committee actually walked out in protest. This is the first time this ever happened in its history. And all these terrible crimes that I've described to you, this is not even all of it. There is so much more damage and death that Kissinger caused around the world. In all, Kissinger's foreign policy led directly to the deaths of between 3 and 4 million people and the suffering of so many more. So let's again take a moment to reflect and look at this man who is being hailed today as such a great statesman. And in a way, he does really symbolize the United States and what they've done time and time again around the world, what they continue to do. As I've just said, I see so, so much of Kissinger's foreign policy, of Kissinger's work in what is happening right now in Gaza. I really do see it so clearly. We have to make these connections. And lastly, I would like to denounce Henry Kissinger. I'd like to denounce his legacy, everything that he stands for, everything that he is. And I would like our thoughts, our hearts to go out to all of his victims, to all the people that were killed because of him, and to all the people that live with the psychological and physical scars of his policies, of the regimes that he empowered, of all the horror that he inflicted upon people all over the world. That is who my thoughts are with. And I really do affirm that not only will he face justice, may he face his victims, may he face justice now that he's dead, now he's in the ancestors. Now may he face justice, may he have to face all of his victims, but not only that. May he be extinguished in the cosmos because he is unworthy of human personality, as Don Pedro Albizu Campos said. With that, con mucho, mucho cariño, keep dancing, keep running your ancestors, never stop affirming for peace and justice. Con mucho, mucho cariño. We're going to end off with another version of El Derecho de Vivir en Paz. This was an amazing recording that was done. So many amazing Chilean artists. I think it's like 29 different artists on this particular rendition of it. Absolutely beautiful. So we're going to end off with that. Chao, mi gente.
El derecho de vivir sin miedo en nuestro país,
en conciencia y unidad con toda la humanidad.
Ningún cañón borrará el surco de la hermandad.
Palomar, palomar.
dancing, keep honoring your ancestors con mucho, mucho cariño. Chao, mi gente. If you like that show, please don't hesitate to reach out to me and leave me a voice message on Anchor. There is a link up in the description. You can also reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Voice of the Water Lily, or check out my blog, voiceofthelily.water.blog. You can leave me a message on any of those platforms. And please reach out. Let me know what you think of the show. If you have any suggestions, song requests, or anything, please reach out to me. And also, if I got something wrong and you want to correct me, please don't hesitate to reach out. Until next time, ciao.